You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Jeremiah had the unenviable task of conducting his prophetic ministry during the last days and the eventual collapse of the kingdom of ancient Judah. What a job. Sign me up, right? Our brother John Holbert helped us last week to understand about Jeremiah's call and what that meant. Well, according to the Hebrew texts, what was coming was an event of cataclysmic proportions. You see, the chosen people, the children of Israel, and the ancient covenant that was established with Abraham and Sarah were to be laid waste. Now, when we try to examine the archaeological history of the ancient Near East, there's a little bit of a different picture that emerges. You see, ancient Judah, the kingdom for all intents and purposes, was not a major player in the geopolitical scene. It was a small kingdom. And we have to remember that the text we have are from that small kingdom's perspective. It was a small kingdom that did not carry a lot of clout except for those who inhabited its borders. And that was about it. During that time, there were three superpowers: Assyria, which was to the north, Babylon, which was to the east, and Egypt, which was to the west. And when the Assyrian Empire was taken over by the Babylonian Empire, the power, of course, shifted. Josiah was king of Judah at the beginnings of Jeremiah's ministry. And at that time, as best we can determine, Assyria was already in decline. Babylon had not yet replaced it as the superpower, and Egypt was still recovering from having been under the domination and the rule of Syria. So things were in flux. So Judah, the kingdom of Judah, for a period had some autonomy. But a new pharaoh, a new power, arose in Egypt, who chose to march their armies northward to join forces with the Assyrians. Josiah, the king of Judah, was now in a position where he was going to have to choose sides. Would it be Egypt? Would it be Babylon? It was an ancient equivalent of our modern Cold War. And the choice, really, for Judah was about the lesser of two evils. And what should not surprise us is that we believe the people were divided in their choice, and the final monarchs were divided and flip-flopped in their loyalties. So this new pharaoh who rose up in Egypt and caused this northern march of the armies up to Assyria, ostensibly to help the empire, well, it appeared that King Josiah, during that time, saw this going on and chose to support Babylon and attempted to block the Egyptians at Megiddo. And a battle took place, and history tells us that Josiah, the king, was killed in that battle. And we know that the Egyptians eventually joined forces with the Assyrians, and it started to mark the end of the Assyrian Empire now becoming the Egyptian Empire. During this time, we know that Jehoahaz was selected as the one that was going to follow his father as the king of Judah. And at this point, Judah had no choice other than to live under the domination of Egypt. So much so that Jehoahaz was deposed after only 3 months because the Egyptians did not like him. They replaced him with Jehoiakim, and Jehoahaz remained a prisoner of Egypt, never to return to Judah. You see the intrigue that's going on here. Now, while this new king, Jehoiakim, was originally paying tribute to Egypt, it all changed. It all changed when the Egyptian forces were defeated by the Babylonians. And so Jehoiakim had to change his allegiances. Babylon, at that point, decided they were going to try to take over Egypt, but eventually they were unsuccessful. And so this failure led to the king of Judah changing his mind again and now became pro-Egypt. Are you totally confused? Good, you should be. Now, King Nebuchadrezzar of Babylon, in response chose to invade this region, and a siege was now upon the city of Jerusalem. And during that siege, King Jehoiakim died, and he was succeeded by his son Jeconiah, that the texts say was either 8 years old or 18 years old. A bit of a difference, you might say. And 3 months later, we know it was over for Judah. Jeconiah, the court of prominent citizens and the elite of Judah were deported to Babylon. They were taken into this empire with a goal of assimilating them into Babylonian culture. And at that point, Babylon now appointed Zedekiah as this last king of the greatly reduced Judean kingdom. Loyalty was to Babylon, or there was going to be grief. Zedekiah unwisely revolted against Babylon and attempted to enter into alliance once again with the other side, with Egypt. So Jerusalem was again under siege, and it finally fell to waste. Zedekiah was taken into captivity in Babylon, and so ended the kingdom of Judah. Isn't that a time that you would want to be a prophet to that kingdom? It was during that final episode that our morning's text finds its source. Jeremiah the prophet, in no uncertain terms, told Zedekiah the king that he would be crushed by King Nebuchadrezzar if he chose to go to war. According to Jeremiah, God said, "I am going to turn back the weapons of war that are in your hands and with which you are fighting against the king of Babylon and against the Chaldeans who are besieging you outside the walls. And I will bring them together into the center of the city. I myself will fight against you with outstretched hand and mighty arm." And of course, we know Zedekiah's choice and the outcome, as the prophet had foretold, Jerusalem was to be laid waste for at least 70 years of captivity. Okay, now let's be honest here, friends. The prophets in general, and this passage specifically, really create some theological conundrums for us. At face value, we have God not only siding with the enemy of Judah, Babylon, we hear of God actively participating in the destruction of Jerusalem and its people. I don't know about you, but this is a rather jarring thought. God actively participating in the pain and suffering of the remnant of the chosen people. This judgment on the part of God is rendered, according to those like Jeremiah, because of their unfaithfulness. Because of their unfaithfulness as God's people and the leaders. So what we have here, friends, is another of those examples of an ancient perspective on God that seems not to jive with our modern sensibilities. Now, while there are some who still see God as controlling what happens to us, this cosmic puppet master, that is certainly not the mainstream of Jewish and Christian theology today. What is reality, however, is that bad choices, our bad choices more often than not, lead to bad outcomes. And instead of blaming God, we realize that outcomes are reflective of our choices. And if we were to fast forward from the time of Jeremiah all the way to the first century and the time of Jesus, it's an idea that would be consistent with Jesus' teaching, that we are responsible for our actions or our lack of action. Now, that does not mean outright dismissal of the writings of the prophets. There are realities in these writings that ring true to our modern experiences. In this particular case, we have Judah choosing against God, represented in King Zedekiah, choosing Egypt over Babylon, a question of alliances and allegiances. And perhaps the modern message for us could be looked at in this way. If our call as followers of Jesus, if our call is to love God and love neighbor, how do our alliances, our allegiances, how do our individual actions support this call? In other words, do our words and our aspirations align with our actions? Well, friends, if you're paying attention to any of the news services, and it's pretty hard to escape them, we know that we're now 1 year out from the 2016 general election. We remain a country that is greatly divided, with competing visions for the nation, positioning, and the my way or the highway kind of attitude continues to confound Congress. Regardless of one's political affiliation, we find ourselves in a not so good place. And this same struggle filters in all the other places of our lives. The same is even true within many of our faith communities. It doesn't surprise us, or at least it should not surprise us, that at this place and time, there are huge divisions within the church, often spurred on by our choice of alliances, our allegiances, and even where we let our political persuasions creep in. The unfortunate reality is that our basis for this is found on what is really a faulty logic. Suffice it to say, Jesus would probably very likely find fault, great fault, with both political parties in this nation, and would probably be highly critical of the community of faith and our inability so often to value God's call to love, to love over our stubbornness and over our self-interest. Jeremiah was living under the law. What we might want to think about is the Ten Commandments. And when we move to the time of Jesus, he really did a great job of simplifying it for us, giving us the two commandments, this call to faithfulness. And that faithfulness, I believe, is made real in our relationship to God. And we're told by Jesus that that faithfulness is made most real in our actions with each other, in the way we treat each other. And I believe in this place and time that we are being called to an alternative vision, one which values each person, one which also places the common good on a higher level than the rugged individuality that we often worship. To state it simply, friends, the gospel message is at odds with our ethos as an American people, and it always has been at odds because the gospel is a message of counterculture. The gospel message never gives us permission to sidestep the call to love God and to love neighbor. And we can rationalize it all we want, but the result is not the gospel. The truth for us is if we cannot find a way to operate out of love and hope, the results will be just as devastating as the results for ancient Judah. The unfortunate thing is that we have allowed ourselves to let issues which have profound spiritual and theological implications to become tools for political manipulation. So whether it's a subject like immigration or the inclusion of all people in the life of the church, whether it is economic injustice or whether it is this bizarre notion of exceptionalism, we have a clear direction that in Jesus' terms is undebatable. We're called to love. We're called to love our neighbor, period. Judah had its own crisis of faith. We have our crisis of faith, I believe. Our integrity is at stake as God's people in this world who are called. We are called to be the voice that condemns fear-mongering, that casts aside hate and distrust, instead offering a path of love, a path of reconciliation, a path of hope for all of God's children and all of God's creation. That's our prophetic call for today. That's where I believe our allegiance should be. So, friends, will we hear the distant words of the prophet? Will we hear Jesus' words? Or will they fall on deaf ears? Will we be Judah, ignoring Jeremiah? Our neighborhood, our city, our nation, our world are all desperately in need of hope. What will it take for the message of hope to drown out all the other messages that fill our discourse, our media, our social networking? Are we willing to give God's message to us a chance?
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.